You're listening to littlepodcast.com.
Stupid Picross. Stupid addictive Picross.
Is that why they haven't released really hardly any versions in the US? Is because it's so addictive they know we can't handle it?
I think it's because it's just really, really hard to learn. It's hard to explain how to play Picross. And, you know, you can't just pick it up and know what you're doing. And it requires a lot of just thinking.
I don't even know what that means.
I don't know. The thing is, I think Americans weren't ready for it when it was the big thing in Japan, but I think we're ready for it now. Because it's very much like Sudoku, you know?
Sure.
You have to figure out how to play it, but once you do, you know, it's very enjoyable. But, you know, you've got that hurdle to go over. But I think more people would be willing to give it a chance these days. I don't know. Hey, Sean.
Hey, Bank.
So, let's get this over with. I want to go back to playing Picross.
What?
No. I'm just kidding. I'm totally kidding. I'm going to play Picross while we're doing this. Okay.
Oh, fair enough. So,
What? Have you played Picross?
Well, you may or may not know this, but we don't really get Picross in the U.S.
You got lots of them. You got the original Game Boy one. You got the DS one. Okay, maybe two. I think you got 3D Picross. I'm not sure. Maybe. Okay, yeah, I know not nearly as many as they got in Japan, but like the Game Boy one is plenty fun.
I guess.
Plus, you can also play it just with paper and a pencil as well.
I guess I don't know much about it really. I just know that like the Forest Yacht guys like to complain how they don't have it.
Yeah, I mean we don't get a lot of the versions that were made, and I mean, and then if you count like Satellaview and what Nintendo Power versions. That Nintendo Power being the cartridge writing format, not the defunct magazine. Nintendo released like, I don't know, between games and expansions, probably about 20 different versions of Picross.
Wow.
And we got two or three.
Sure.
It's good. There's the problem. That's why they don't release it, because I'm just trying to explain it briefly to you, and I don't have the words. It's kind of like Sudoku and kind of like a crossword puzzle, but not really like either of those things.
Well, I'm sold.
Basically, I like it because basically it's black and white pixel art mixed with a puzzle game. Mixed with math that's simple enough for me to do.
Okay. So like Minesweeper, except.
Ah, actually, that's kind of a good one. Yeah, because Minesweeper, you've got the numbers indicate how far you are away from a mine, right?
It indicates how many are adjacent.
Oh, okay. And in Picross, you have numbers on the side that tells you how many. Like how many adjacent blocks there are in a row. And the rule is, of course, that none of those block patterns can touch. So if you see like the number 5 and then the number 2, that means one of the ones is going to be 5 long and one of them is going to be 2. And in between, there's going to be at least one empty space.
Okay, but you got to figure out.
Yeah, you got to figure out exactly where they are. And of course, some of them are easy because some lines are just totally done, and you know you learn the rules of it. You should play Picross.
Yeah,
I will, if you will agree to give it a try, I will send you a copy of Picross.
Nintendo, if you're listening, I'd love how to play. I'd love to play Picross.
Well, I think the most recent version. 3D Picross was released in the States. I don't know. I'll have to look into that. But they never sell super well here. But super fun. Super fun. Anyway.
Yeah.
I will try to stop playing Picross for a little while in order to get this podcast moving. So.
Yes, yes. Yes. Well, while you've been playing Picross, I've been hard at work getting our videos done.
Ouch!
Whoa! Sick burn.
Hey, I've been editing. Can I talk about what I've been editing?
Yes, no. Sure.
Yes?
Why not?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, we're not saving as a surprise.
Well, I mean, what do you want to say?
I want to say the video I've been editing, but if I say the title, I think it'll give it away.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I'm editing an unboxing video of some sort.
Yes.
Okay, I think I can say that.
Yes.
And I'm editing a new On the Go, which is not really me going anywhere, I suppose. maybe, actually, now that I think about it, maybe we should change the branding of that one.
Oh, gosh.
That talks about... Can I say what it talks about a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay. It talks about variations within the same game. The reprints and things like that going through. And I'm not going to mention the games, but yeah, watch it. It should be interesting. And those are almost ready to go. I'm just editing out some of the fumbling around right now. So
yeah.
Yep. It's hot. So
I'm excited.
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean... I do that as a break between Picross.
Well, we're releasing our longest ever episode as part of this thing, and it's like long enough that we could have done like 3 or 4, or depending on how short they are, maybe even 5 longer ones. But it's worth it. I can't think of anything else we're going to take out.
How many VinkCons in length is it?
Oh gosh, I think all the VinkCons could fit inside of it with room to spare.
Yes.
If you're listening to this, then there are at least 2 videos, well, not videos, but trailers up that you can watch. Yes. There's the general Winter Dojo trailer that went up that announces our launch date for the first video, March 11th. That's a Wednesday. So even though there's really no Powit TV to speak of anymore, I'm keeping to that Wednesday release date.
All right.
We had the podcast on Fridays too, right? So
yes.
there's that. So then we've also shared the trailer this week. This is coming out anyway.
Yep.
For the first video, which is it's so stupid.
What?
I'm really selling it right now.
Yeah, okay.
This was spawned from a podcast that our second ever episode of the podcast.
Okay.
Kind of a one-off comment. We're finally getting around to it. I think when we filmed it, I had in my mind that it was like more recent than that. Like it was like episode 72 or something like that. But no. Yeah. It was like episode 2.
It might have been in episode 72 that we remembered it.
No, because I listened to it again because I wanted to get a clip of the podcast to put into the episode, right?
Okay.
And we made no mention of it, and I was like, "What? I don't know what to do." So I had to go back to the person who asked the question because it's Denshi Mail, by the way.
First
redundant since like 2012, I want to say. Woof. But
yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah.
Yep. So. If you don't know what I'm talking about, that's just encouragement to go watch the trailer. How about that? Yes. I won't even say what it is.
And if you don't know what Denshi Mail is,
you should watch all of those.
Yes, you should. You should.
All of them. We should. We'll link stuff in the show notes.
Yeah.
It's all good. Wow. It's all good.
Man, but doing the Denshi Mails was fun. We still have footage for one that we never put together.
Are you talking about the vending machine one?
Yeah.
Oh, good Lord.
That might never come. That might never come up.
That might get used somewhere else. I mean, how many years ago was that?
Okay, let's see. I was working at... Okay, that's a job ago. And it was filmed by... Okay, he's no longer here. All right.
I want to say 2009.
Six years ago. Yeah, 2009. Yeah, it's 2009.
Maybe we should give a little history of Denshi Mail. So we started that in 2009 after we had finished up season 1.
Yes.
While we were regrouping, we wanted to get some other stuff out. So we were like, well, there are questions we didn't answer about the Famicom and other things in those first 6 episodes. So we'll just answer them here. And we get right to the meat of it answering questions about how to like different power hookups, because I had also burned out my Famicom as mentioned last time. And then hookups to HGTVs and stuff like that, and then we sort of, how do I put it kindly, ran out of ideas, so
We did not run out of ideas. As you will hear today, we still get wonderful questions coming in here, but we have found that it's just so much easier to just answer them on the podcast than it is to make a separate video for everything. But, you know, I think we've still got some Denchi mails in us, though. I think we
Sure. It's just that, yeah, it's with all the other stuff that we're doing, there's no filler to do, right? Like we're in full bore here. And even if it were, some of these are really complicated. Like my favorite one, I think the best one honestly is still the Rare Games one, which is really about the FMC disc checker.
Yeah.
But then it's full of stupid jokes.
Yeah. Now the thing is we meant them to be little filler bits, but a lot of the Denchi mails are longer than a lot of the episodes. We really need to rename our structure because we get such great reaction on YouTube whenever we would release a new Denchi mail, such as "Where's a real episode?" So you know what? You want real episodes? You want long, meaty, real episodes? Well, you're gonna get them, and you're gonna watch it for 20 some minutes.
Good lord!
Oh man!
This is the only Denchi mail we're doing for this run of videos. So if you're wondering where the real ones are, they're all after this one.
So I
get that one out of the way right now.
Yep. I got a draft of it last night or whatever. And usually whenever Sean sends me a draft, that's fine. You know, that's, you know, for our old videos that would be a 5-6 minute thing. But you know, but I was about to go to bed, but I'm like, oh, I should watch this, not remembering how long this episode was. And I'm just, and I, you know,
Are you saying it was a slog?
No, actually, I'm saying that I was surprised by how late it was when it finished. But it moved along at a good pace, and I laughed out loud a few times, despite knowing exactly what was going to happen. So I think I think that's a good thing.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay, we should answer some questions then, I guess.
Let's do it.
Keeping them in suspense like this is just terrifying, I'm sure.
I know. Okay, so go ahead. Go with the first question.
All right. We asked some people on our Facebook page if they had any questions for us, and this is what we got. A sampling of what we got.
Well, if your question wasn't answered this time...
There are reasons.
Some of them would be kind of episodes in and of themselves. Right. So
either like longer podcasts, or maybe we want to make a video out of them, or maybe we're already making a video out of them.
And some were just terrible questions.
No, there are no terrible questions. Just terrible people.
Yes. Wait. No. They were all very good. Okay. Yeah. So let's go.
All right. Mike Windsor asks, have both of you been to Super Potato?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. There. Next question.
Right. That was good. No.
No. Okay. We can expand on that.
Yes.
Did we go together ever?
Yes.
Or were we? Yes. We did that during that trip.
The first time I went to Tokyo Game Show, we went to Super Potato.
Oh, okay. I've been there like three times, I think. Three or four.
I know we tried to go the last time, but it moved. So
I have never. Oh, wait, no, I take that back. I've been to the Super Potato in Osaka as well, and I did buy something there. I wonder if that one's still around.
Hmm.
Nobody ever talks about it. I wonder if that's still around. If anybody knows, I guess I could just look it up. Anyway, I was just about to say I've never bought anything from a Super Potato, but then I remembered that the Osaka one, so.
I have.
Yes. What did you buy?
I'm sure I got like 3 out of 5 of my duplicate copies of Zelda's 2 and or 1 and 2.
Oh, really?
They were just so cheap.
That was at Super Potato?
Pretty sure. I mean that was the big old place with just like wall to wall floors of video games, right?
Well, I mean there's a lot of places like that. I thought you got your Zeldas at Trader's.
Oh, good lord. Maybe I'm getting confused.
Super Potato, in my humble opinion, and Super Potato, if you're listening, and you were thinking of sponsoring us, I'm just kidding right now. Okay.
Well, I'm convinced.
But if you're not, listening, I think Super Potato is overrated.
Oh.
I think it's strongly overrated. I think that Super Potato, as it is now, and Super Potato as it was 14 years ago when I first went there, are very different, though. Super Potato stood as this kind of unknown gaming holy land that existed, and then bloggers got a hold of it and posted all about it, and now it's like half tourists, and the prices have gone through the roof. Because they're selling to the tourists. It used to be a place where you could get games super cheap, and they had tons and tons of selection. Not super cheap, but I mean reasonable. But now there are so many better deals if you're going to go to Japan, and even if you're going to go to Tokyo, because Super Potato has all the hype. And so everybody wants to go there. Everybody wants to see there. It's not as inexpensive as it used to be. A lot of the cool rare stuff that they had has been bought by eBayers, you know. I don't know. And the second time I went there, it smelled like poo. I don't know why, but it smelled like human poo.
Was there a convention in town?
I believe it was Tokyo Game Show weekend. but the aisles are really narrow there, and it was just packed with all kinds of like journalists in quotes.
Stinky journalists.
And I don't know what happened. Maybe someone had a child who needed to use the restroom, and they
I thought it was going to end with had a child, period.
And just left it in one of the rows. I don't know, but it did have, and I the people I was with had also noticed it, that it had the smell of feces in the air.
Great.
Now, so Super Potato, if you're thinking of sponsoring us,
I'm just kidding.
And I've got a new slogan with you, Super Potato 2005, 99% less poo. Oh,
good lord, we're never.
Yeah, they're not going to spawn. But, like, the thing is, I mean, I suppose it's definitely worth seeing. You know, if you want to see tons of games in one place, you can either go to Super Potato or Sean's house.
They'll see that later.
Yeah.
Why spoil it?
I mean, they have tons of stuff. It's all for sale. But you're going to find better prices online. Without question, and you're going to find better prices but less selection at other Japanese stores.
Yes, so you just have to go to lots of other Japanese stores and you'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you're only in Tokyo for a day, it's the place to go, because you'll be able to get pretty much everything you need in one place, but you'll be paying a lot more for it than you would through other means. Personally, over Super Potato, I like the Mandrake chain of stores. They've got very cool stuff. Manga Soko, very cool. Unfortunately, my favorite and the largest in my area, one of those closed down recently, so maybe Super Potato's on the right track. You know, get that tourist money,
I guess. Should we go on to the next one then?
Yeah,
all right. How Dan asks, well, one of his many questions, but this is the one we're going to answer.
Okay.
Which do you find more aesthetically pleasing, the Famicom, the Sharp Twin Famicom, the Sharp Twin Famicom Turbo, the NES, or NES 2? Famicom?
Well, I think the NES 2, I mean, it's the same case at least.
Well, not exactly.
What do you mean? What's different? I actually don't know.
The NES2 and the AV Famicom?
Yeah. I mean, I know the inputs and stuff, but I mean, aesthetically, what's different?
The AV Famicom is flat, so that you can stick a Famicom disk system on it. That's about it.
Oh. I didn't even know there was... I thought it was an identical case. I didn't know... Look at this. Famicom Dojo. Vink learned something.
I mean, we may be working on... something for this, so I don't want to say much more. Okay. But, I mean, if it's between the two of those things, I think I find the NES 2 more aesthetically pleasing.
Between the AV Famicom and the NES 2?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm gonna start a rating system here. I'm going to start writing down an order here. So, all right, NES 2 over AV Famicom. All right.
Okay.
That's so, just me. I don't know about, I guess since you don't really know, I'm not going to count your opinion.
Thanks.
You're welcome. All right. Well, all right. I gave you one. You give me one.
All right. It's hard for me to separate aesthetics from playability. It really is.
Really?
You know what I mean? Because I adore the original family computer, how it looks. I think it captures 1983. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's iconic. In the same way that the Toaster Nintendo is iconic, you know?
Sure.
But neither of them are my favorite way to play games just because they both have their flaws from an actual usability standpoint. The original Famicom, because the controller cords coming out the side of the controllers blocking your hand.
Yeah.
And of course, the NES, which had a lot of trouble with hollow-loaded games. But aesthetically, they're probably my favorites. Aesthetically, those two. But for usability and for the ones that I actually will do, I'm Turbo Twin all the way.
So, all right.
Because I'm really bad at games and the Turbo helps.
Between Famicom and NES, which would you prefer?
Ooh. Purely on aesthetics.
Yes.
Going Famicom.
Okay. And then the twins above all three of those?
Not for aesthetics.
All right.
What about you? Give me some here.
Well, I agree with you on the Famicom and NES comparison. I mean, I like the NES well enough, but there's just something about the Famicom that I like so much, and I can't really explain why.
If we're going controller head to head, just the controller, mm-hmm. I'll take the NES. I think the cord's coming out the right side, the correct side of it.
Yeah.
I know, but from usability, Famicom, it's got a microphone.
Those face buttons can get really scuffed up, you know, if I take good care of them.
Yep.
Boy. Yeah, just aesthetics. I think you just made me change my mind. I have to say NES now. Thanks. I'm going to flip these around.
It's okay, man.
Nobody's
going to grade your work.
Listen, no, everyone's judging us right now.
Yeah. It's okay. I'm judging them as well.
So the twin turbo.
Yeah.
I think is my least favorite, honestly. Like I like the twin a lot more.
Yeah. As a system?
Aesthetically.
Okay. Why?
I don't really like puke green that much.
Okay, no. But it actually has a light in the button.
Fine, but it's ugly though. It feels like an afterthought, and like the case mold I like better on the original twin.
Which one, the red or the black?
Well, it's the same molding. It's just
okay.
They both look very good to me, but like you know that just sick color of green. Do you remember like Mr. Yuck?
I do. Oh my God! It's Mr. Yuck Green.
Yeah, it's Mr. Yuck Green, and it's on black, and the case doesn't look as good. And
I am good. Who wants to mod my twin to put Mr. Yuck in place of my power button, whereas his face would glow when you turn it on? Oh man, that's the. I am good. No, I don't mod systems. I might. Oh, I've never felt compelled to do a case mod until right now.
Oh my goodness.
We better, for those who didn't grow up in the early 80s, we should probably put a picture of Mr. Yuck in this podcast.
Okay.
In the show notes. Good oh, green. It's the same green. It is the same green. Vink learned two things today. One of them was useful.
I wasn't even planning. I just like went through my mental Rolodex to figure out why I didn't like it. And that's what the first thing that came up was like, oh, that's it.
Okay, but if you had one system that you were going to not, we're not talking shelf candy here. Shelf candy. I like that. I'm going to use that. Shelf candy. Oh my
gosh.
Yeah, if we're not talking shelf candy here, like not the ones you're showing off, but the ones you're actually going to use day to day. What's your system?
Oh, well, I mean, as much as I like my AV Famicom and Famicom, the twins got to win.
Yeah.
You know, even if like the disk drive fails in that thing, you know, it's still a perfectly usable Famicom. It has AV outs, has a microphone. It's future complete while also being the best version of the hardware.
Off the shelf, totally agree with you. But I have, and we brought it up in the last right. Denshi Mail, I have an AV modded original Famicom, and that it looks beautiful. It's the only thing I don't like about it, the only thing that I'd still give the edge to the twin is the cords are really short.
Mm. You know, I was just thinking the NES takes the top spot for me.
Hmm.
I mean, maybe for the functionality thing underneath the twin, but there were, and I haven't encountered any, but I would love to someday. There were some NES2s that, if you complained about how crappy your picture looked, supposedly Nintendo would replace it with an AV version.
Yep.
And if that were the case,
only through that, yeah.
Yeah. If that were the case, then I would totally say that's my number one over the regular NES, because, you know, no tiny ass chip, no blinking light. And the AV on the AV Famicom, I don't know if you know this, but you plug in, because NES is mono, right?
Yep.
All that hardware is mono, and it comes with a mono cable. Actually, no, it doesn't come with one. You have to buy one separately, but they made one.
Or you could use a Super Famicom one.
You can, and it will output sound on both channels.
Yes. I mean, it's not really stereo. It's just two channels of mono, but yeah.
Right. But that's a big deal, and that's better than any other version that the Famicom hardware can do. So, boom. I'm pretty sure, you know, I don't know if the NES2 AV version does this, but since it's probably the same hardware as the AV Famicom, I'm going to guess yes, and that would be my number one pick.
All right.
So.
Which 3DO do you like?
I don't even... The only one I know of is the one that's on Trey's show. Because that's the only one I've ever handled.
Is that one of the brick ones or one of the top loaders?
Brick, I want to say.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's a nice 3DO.
It's a very nice 3DO.
They break down a lot easier, though. If yeah, I was using... But for my shelf candy, I'm going to keep using that until it catches on. Definitely the brick one looks much better. Same with the Neo Geo CD. There's the top loader, the CDZ, and the original one. And I'd say the original, even though it's prone to failure. Then again, so was the CDZ. Okay. Right. Anyway,
this is my amalgamated list now between functionality and other stuff.
All right, go for it.
I got the NES2 AV on top.
Okay.
NES, Famicom, Twin Famicom, NES2, AV Famicom, Twin Turbo.
what about that Sharp TV that had a cartridge slot in the side?
That's the bottom.
That's the bottom.
That's on the bottom.
What about a Famicom titler?
All right, moving on.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Justin Schober writes to us, and appropriate since his question is what fires off our Denshi Mail coming up.
All right.
Kick off our Winter Dojo here.
Ooh.
Also our point man with the little podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
But I had been pronouncing it Schuber.
Ah.
And I like that better. So I think we should change his name.
Good. All right. So from now on, Justin Schuber writes.
Okay.
Why did Konami create the Konami code, and why that sequence of buttons? And all right. I didn't know the answer to this.
I didn't either, but I made something up. Okay, so no. This is now that particular sequence of buttons. I'm not entirely sure of. My guess is that it would be something that wouldn't be hit accidentally. You know, you kind of have to know to do it. But the reason the Konami code was there wasn't so, at least not at first, wasn't for you the player. It was for the coders and programmers for testing purposes. Most of the early Konami codes basically did either invincibility or tons and tons of lives, and that would give the developers a way to play through the game with try a number of different ways, hit detection, things like that, just to test out the game without having to start all the way at the beginning and play really well to get to different points of it. But as it went on, you know, and people discovered this code, I'd say they put it in just because it was expected of them at a certain point.
I think there's a secret in your comments there somewhere that their games were just too darn hard.
Well, I do not know if back when I played video games in the past, if I had ever beaten a Konami game without using the Konami code. I don't think I have, but I have completed several Konami games with that code, and they registered my memory as some of my favorite games. So I guess it worked out for me. But like, you try to beat Life Force without the Konami code, it's a hard game. All of a sudden, our hardcore listeners are like, what? You need more than one life? Check out my gameplay video. Why is my listener German now? I think Germans are really good at video games.
Yeah, well. Nope, I got nothing. I don't have a comment there.
They are much better at video games than I am at pretending to be German.
Yes.
Wait a second. I'm half German. Anyway.
Which half?
On my mother's side.
So she's full German?
Well, no, but I mean, but both of her parents were German, so.
So you're a quarter German. Oh, no, wait. I see.
Location doesn't affect race.
Well, is German a race or just a nationality?
Oh. Dang it. I don't know. Listen, you.
So about video games.
Video games.
Love
those.
I think some might be wondering why not just take the cheat code out of the game. And let me tell you about programming things. Let me tell you specifically about programming things in assembly, which is more or less what these guys are doing on the NES. You don't take things out. And you don't take things out because you have to know where your code is. And if you move things around, it's going to affect every other piece of code that has a reference or a ROM location. Yep. Okay, so you don't take things out.
In those days, glitches were features.
Yeah.
Now, in these days, they can't be asked. Unity's totally broken. We'll get to it later. Just put it out there.
I don't even know what you're talking about right now.
Assassin's Creed Unity? Shipped.
Oh, sorry. I was thinking of like the developer tool.
Oh, no. Unity, the developer tool. If you'd like to sponsor us, I have I have good feelings about you as a developer tool.
I'm glad we clarified that.
Ubisoft, you make other games than the Assassin's Creed series, so there's still sponsorship opportunity here.
Yeah, I really, really enjoy...
Rayman! Rayman's good.
I was gonna say Child of Light, but I blanked on it.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So there's that.
Trying so hard to sell out, but nobody's buying. Okay. Anyway,
I mean, maybe we're not trying hard enough yet.
Yes.
So I mean, the continent code's a good subject. We could probably, you know, if we have time between all the other stuff, think about doing a video. What would we say though? What would be unique? Like, I don't. The thing I don't want to do is to like try and make the exhaustive list of every Konami code in every game. That would just be, oh, that would be so boring.
Well, I don't know. I don't think it would be so boring, but I bet it's been done a few times already.
I suppose.
So, I don't know. I was just happy to see it in Wreck-It Ralph.
That's right.
That was a nice shout out. I think it's got to be the code that people know more than any other code. I'd say it's more well known than Justin Bailey. Right.
And I think any probably because it's so ubiquitous across consoles and generations and whatnot. But people know different variations of it, and I see one of those that's not like my version, and I just like go cross-eyed.
Yeah.
It's a very particular thing, you know.
What about, you know what might be interesting? Some new retro games, like retro-styled games, have put the Konami code in as like an homage, you know. So that would be kind of interesting, because I know a lot of like a lot of indie games, give it a try. It might do something.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Interesting. Which version?
Usually the Famicom version, but I guess you got to figure out what your game pad of choice, what would qualify as an A button and what would qualify as a B button. But yeah.
Right.
Cool. Okay. Mm-hmm. Do we want to do one more? Or should we save them for later?
Yeah, because we'll be back in 2 weeks.
We will.
I mean, you know, really, we also have a whole backlog of stuff from emails and
that is very
comments,
true.
And it's just we need interns to go through this stuff for us.
now accepting applications for unpaid interns.
Yeah. Well,
I'm also looking to start EuroVinCon.
I think it's about as much effort. Yeah, I was going to say we're going to need an intern just to handle the applications with the interns.
This is a good point. We're looking for an intern. This is also unpaid.
An interim intern. Just until we get all the interns figured out.
Just to handle the stuff within our company. So we need an interim internal intern.
Yes, and you may apply to be a proper intern during this process so you can stay on.
We don't have any offices, so it's going to have to be online. So we're looking for an internal intern.
Why is it internal if there's no office to go to?
Ooh. Eternal.
Eternal. You will always be our intern.
An eternal, unpaid, interminable.
Isn't that just a slave?
I like to use the word indentured executive assistant. All right. Anyway.
I think that's good then. We'll be back next week with a regular episode about Sega, right?
Yeah, Sega. Sega.
I haven't recorded it yet. I don't know what's going to happen.
Ooh. I can almost taste the excitement.
All right. So, cool. Until next week. Oh, next week. Next week's the week.
Ooh. What's happening?
Our video's coming out next week.
Oh, we still
next week from this. Right. Not next week for us. Next week for them.
Next week for them?
Yes.
Do they live in the future?
They or the past, depending on when they listen to it. Oh, this is so confusing. You know, tenses during time travel just get... I think it's very appropriate which video this is. Now that I mentioned time travel, and the year it is.
All right.
Famicom Dojo.